This program focuses on the functions of the School of the Americas, located in Fort Benning, Georgia, and how it, in relation to U.S. foreign policy, aids in the perpetuation, violence, racial hatred, and class separation throughout Latin America. My guests for this program include Sister Merle Noldy, coordinator for the Pax Christi, local activist and student Rachel Castor, and the outreach director for the School of the Americas Watch in Washington, D.C., Eric LeCompte. The School of the Americas' primary function is to train Latin American soldiers and police counterinsurgency and combat techniques. The School of the Americas began in 1946 in Panama and was moved to Georgia in 1984, and since its opening, the trainees have been tied to some of the most horrific cases of human rights abuses in all of Latin America. Its upper-level trainees include Hugo Banzer Suarez of Bolivia, Manuel Noriega and Omar Torrijos of Panama, Juan Velasco Alvarado of Peru, and many other Latin American dictators who are notorious for human rights abuses while they were in power. More than 60,000 soldiers and police officers from almost every country in Latin America have been trained at the school. Many times, when officers have been cited for atrocious human rights abuses, the majority involved are graduates of the School of the Americas. Some of the most appalling cases include the death of Archbishop Oscar Romero, who worked with the poor communities in El Salvador. Two of the three officers cited in the assassination were graduates of the school. Three of five officers cited in the rape and murder of four U.S. churchwomen. 10 of 12 cited for the El Mazote massacre of 900 civilians were graduates of the U.S. Army School of the Americas. The list goes on, and yet there are many more cases that haven't been documented because oftentimes the military has so much control that investigations don't take place as a result of intimidation, and when they do, they may end in assassination. Soldiers sent to the School of the Americas to receive training take courses in counterinsurgency, which is meant to be used against aggressors and terrorists. Instead, the techniques are used against the poor in Latin America. As corrupt governments nationalize lands owned by peasant subsistence farmers, they're often left without a home and a means to obtain food. When these farmers and peasants organize to share ideas and initiatives to obtain land from the government, they are often killed in large groups, many times an entire village. It is mainly this reason that the school is being called the School of the Assassins. The School of the Americas was renamed the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation on January 17th of 2001. Although it appears that the school has been reformed, the same military training techniques are still being taught. This is simply another futile attempt by government and military leaders of deterring thought with the carefully chosen language imposed. Last year, the now late Georgia senator and School of the Americas supporter was quoted as saying the change was purely cosmetic and that it was proposed so that the school could continue its mission and operation. It was for these reasons that the School of the Americas Watch was created, first in Georgia and now mainly in Washington, D.C., but local watch groups have been rising up in many states across the United States in the past decade. Eric LeCompte, outreach director for the School of the Americas Watch in Washington, D.C., tells us more about the organization.
The School of the Americas Watch is an independent organization that seeks to close down the institution known as the School of the Americas. We do this through lobbying efforts as well as educating people across the country through the mass media, as well as a nonviolent direct action campaign that's focused on closing the School of Terror. The School of the Americas began in 1946. Right now, the school is located at Fort Benning, Georgia, and troops come from all over Latin America, from Bolivia, from El Salvador, from Nicaragua, to come to the United States, to Fort Benning, where they receive training at the School of the Americas in commando tactics, military intelligence, psychological operations, as well as advanced arms training. Then these soldiers have gone back to their home countries, and they've used these skills in El Salvador and Mexico to literally wage war against their own people. They've massacred entire villages, disappeared thousands of people, and forced hundreds of thousands to flee their countries. SOA graduates have targeted grassroots leaders for assassination, torture, rape, and intimidation. And we found that these graduates of the School of the Americas located at Fort Benning, Georgia, that these graduates have especially targeted religious workers and religious leaders, student leaders, and union organizers. Evidently, the school's mission is really to silence these leaders and those who organize for the rights of working people and the poor throughout Latin America. So we at the School of the Americas Watch don't believe that this is an appropriate expenditure. We don't believe that it's the proper way to be spending our tax dollars to essentially teach soldiers from Latin America how to torture and wage war against their own people. And so for the past 10 years, we've been working to close down this school of torture, this school of terror. And we've built a movement of tens of thousands of people across the country since 1990.
Do you believe the goal of closing the school and an investigation into its practices are far from becoming a reality?
Well, I believe that we're closer than ever to closing down this school of terror in our own backyard. In 1989, there was a terrible massacre that took place in El Salvador. 14-year-old Selena Ramos, her mother, and six Jesuit priests were assassinated by an El Salvadoran death squad. And in 1990, a Congressional Truth Commission went down to El Salvador, led by Congressman Joseph Moakley. And what they found were these people, this 14-year-old Selena Ramos, her mother, and six Jesuit priests, that those responsible for their murders were trained at the U.S. Army School of the Americas in Fort Benning, Georgia. That those responsible had taken a commando tactics course and it had been paid for with our tax money. And so in 1990, what happened was people began to go down to the gates of Fort Benning and fast and vigil and start to call attention. In 1990, what began as a movement of literally 13 people now is a movement of tens of thousands of people. Every year, every November, to commemorate the anniversary of the terrible murder of Selena Ramos, her mother, and the Jesuit priests, every November people have returned to Fort Benning to say, we cannot spend our tax money like this. Terror should stop, and we should not be involved in the training of terrorists. So consistently, year after year, more and more people have come. Until this past November, we had close to 15,000 people at the gates of Fort Benning. Right now, we have a bill in Congress, H.R. 1810, which is continuing to gather co-sponsors. Right now, it has well over 100 co-sponsors in the House of Representatives. Congress people calling for this school of terror to be closed. And every few days, we're finding more co-sponsors, more Congress people who are interested in working to close this school of terror. So we really believe that we're closer than ever. But we still have some serious work ahead. Right now, we're working to introduce a bill in the Senate. And we believe that one of the people who's going to be instrumental in introducing that bill will be Senator Wellstone from Minnesota. So in a very specific way, we would ask people from Minnesota really to call on Senator Wellstone to introduce this important human rights bill into the Senate. So we find that our movement continues to build momentum, that continually in the mainstream media, more word gets out of this terror training done in our names down at the School of the Americas at Fort Benning, Georgia. So we believe that we're getting closer and closer to closing the school. As a matter of fact, our efforts have been so successful that our grassroots movement, as well as pressure from Congress, forced the Pentagon to change the name of the school last year from the School of the Americas to the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation. And that was really a great victory, although the training really hasn't changed. It's still taking place in the same place. The same type of terror training is offered at the school. But it really illustrates the power of a grassroots movement here in the United States, that it really forced the Pentagon to do something it had previously refused to do, and that was to change the name of the school and make it seem as if the name change was in fact a closure of the school. But even in spite of that, the movement has grown and momentum continues to close the school of terror.
The growing movement is evident every November with the gathering of thousands of supporters who are for closing the school. Every year, caring individuals who are critical of the United States' corporate interest-based foreign policy gather at the gates of Fort Benning to demonstrate and raise awareness of the terrible atrocities going on every day in Latin America. Some are even caring enough to sacrifice their freedom. 117 people were arrested for delivering coffins, crosses, and indictments to the school. Their nonviolent acts were considered sacrifices to aid in raising awareness about the school. Sister Merle Noldy is one of those involved.
I've been working in the area of peace and justice half and full time for about the last 15 years. I'm actually the coordinator of the local Pax Christi chapter. That, in terms of position, that's the one I would claim, probably.
Can you tell us a bit about your visit to Fort Benning this past November?
Well, I was thinking about that in terms of I've been there four times. They have always been a really very peaceful experience and basically friendly. You have the sense of a community of people coming together who don't necessarily know one another, but yet can really respond and bond with one another rather comfortably in a short period of time. This year, one of the things that I thought was especially effective, I guess, and beautiful, was that they had a large involvement of puppets, large puppets, with the names of the who represented peoples from different countries. So you had these black faces and Native American faces, brown faces. And so that the sense, and they were an important part of the rally, both on Saturday and Sunday. And then the other thing that they did was to create the, with the help of puppets, the sense of can there be an alternative vision, alternative community, because of the security concern on the part of the government. And the gates were basically closed. The fort was basically closed by the building of a chain fence that could not easily be passed. In the past, we've been able to walk onto the fort. You know, maybe, well, in some years it was like 2,200 people who crossed that line of trespassing and were then whisked off in buses or whatever. But this year, that was not possible. Some people did risk arrest in different kinds of ways. I think some 86 people were arrested. But most of us then were in this funeral. It's what's involved is a funeral procession, symbolic funeral procession that ordinarily would cross onto the fort. And this time it just went up to the gates, and then we came back came away from it in another line. But by the time I was quite far back in the line, and by the time our group got to the fence, it had become like a Vietnam wall covered with crosses. Many of the people in the lines are carrying crosses with names of the victims of the School of the Americas. There were flowers and these white crosses and different pins that people were wearing. The whole wall, that whole fence was covered. So that was, in a sense, a very unique part of the experience this past year. Especially, I think it would be especially meaningful for people who had experienced the Vietnam Wall, because this was a memorial, became a memorial wall for many victims of the School of the Americas. I think many people, prior to the development of this particular action for change, were already committed to social justice, achieving social justice, working for peace. I think that, you know, many, well, the participants in the witness at Fort Benning had a great spread age-wise. There were, well, some people came with their small children, and then there were a lot of college-age folks, and then a large people, senior citizens like myself. So there's a good age spread in the witness. So experiences differ in terms of how long people have been concerned about issues of justice. For my age group, probably I would think many of my age group had a prior commitment to working for social change on other issues, and civil rights issues, for example, and women's issues, economic justice, living wage for folks, and those kinds of things. So for that group of people, it was, you know, like here, a growing awareness of our relationship to other countries and what's happening in our world.
Has the number of supporters been increasing over the past few years?
The number of people coming certainly has been growing. One of those years I went, I stood next to a man Probably in maybe in his 60s, and we got into a conversation. And what was remarkable, I think we were probably 10,000 people by that time. And what was remarkable for me to hear his story was that he had been there, I forget the year this witness began, but he had been there at the very beginning, went from every week, I think it was, people gathered, a handful of people gathered outside of the School of the Americas. And here this movement had grown so that 10,000 people were there, people from all around the country. So I think it's kind of a testimony to the efforts to raise consciousness on the part of the people who work with the School of the Americas Watch, that enough people understand it to not only write letters to their congressmen and those kinds of things, but to come together to say in a much larger way that we think this school should close, that it's a symbol of our, it's connected with our foreign policy, and we definitely need a change to have that based on a more human rights kind of perspective.
Do you believe that the involvement of the church has helped to gain attention of legislators and make progress toward closing the school?
Well, I think the whole movement certainly has had influenced legislators.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that there was 10 votes short in the last effort to close pass legislation says that many legislators have come to know, to agree with the position that it should be closed. And I don't think that happened in a vacuum. I think that happened because their constituents were involved. And not only were they involved, but they wrote, visited, communicated with them. Maybe some of them were in jail, went to prison. That it does seem that when a person goes to prison, that person's local community, there's a lot of consciousness raising that goes on in the local community because of that action and the courage and willingness to spend time in prison because of your convictions about this school. Sister of St. Joseph and St. Paul, who I think maybe 3 years ago, anyhow, she was one of Minnesota persons who also spent 6 months in prison. And the kind of coverage of that, well, she gave a lot of talks before she went to prison. We sponsored her at St. Benedict's, but we scheduled it for our monastery dining room. And we had it was a crowded audience who came to hear her story before she went to prison. She was, she was going to go to prison. She had been sentenced. And then there's time in between that sentencing and going. And so a lot of people on our campus came to be aware of at least one person's perception of that school through her. And I know she gave many talks, and there were several stories in the different papers in the Twin Cities and coverage with, through TV. So those are means of educating and raising consciousness.
When did you first become heavily involved with issues in Latin America?
For me, the whole thing of Central America really became alive with the assassination of Oscar Romero in El Salvador. I was working in Chicago. The group I was working with was Women Religious, and we had supported him prior to that time. His kind of witness in this situation in El Salvador was so admirable that at a national meeting we had a resolution of some kind of, I don't know how we formulated that, but we had communicated with him in terms of supporting him. And so his death shocked everyone. I guess even more beyond that, a year later, when four North American women, three of whom were Women Religious and the other was a lay missionary from Cleveland, when they were murdered, that was the first time, I think, that I took to the streets. But I was working in a group with a group whose focus was social justice, especially for women and children. So it wasn't as though it was an issue that broadened. It was another place to act for justice. I had been writing letters and all those kinds of things prior to going to Fort Benning. But it did seem that it was important to become one more person to show up at this event to bring about a close of the school. It's our foreign policy that we have to look at. It's the kind of a question, I think. It relates to the kinds of questions we should be asking ourselves as to why terrorists, why people hate us, and why a movement of terrorism can grow against us. The many specific kinds of situations that are involved, that we're as citizens of a democracy complicit in if we don't question them. Those are things I would, you know, really like to communicate, that this particular issue is connected with a bigger question that every person in our country should be informed about, so they can decide one way or the other what they will support.
Rachel Castor also made the trip to Fort Benning this past November. She is going to tell us a bit about her experience.
This year was a little different because there was a big fence up, and so we were able to talk to some of the police and officials in a different way than we could in past years. So there was a really interesting conversation that went on between the protesters on one side of the fence, this chain link fence, and then some military police and a colonel from the School of the Americas on the other side of the fence, and even some other military personnel. And they were really civil, and both sides were, and had a really interesting conversation just about tactics and about what the school was about and whether it did promote democracy or not. So I was really excited this year to see that happen, because in past years it's been more like the police are there to, like, the military police are there to arrest us, and that's really the only interaction that we have with them. I was really impressed this year with the creativity that went on. After the puppet show, the big street theater that they did with all these cardboard puppets and this amazing street theater that they put on, they took the cardboard and they made it into what they called a global village. And these were just protesters. They took the cardboard and made a cardboard city, basically, right outside the gates of Fort Benning, and invited everyone over to sit and to paint. And they painted roses over everything, and they painted peace signs, and just sat and hung out in this area that they wanted to be diverse, and this idea of a global village where everyone's living peacefully together. And I thought it was a really visible sign of what we want to happen, because so often protesters and people who are critical of the government are labeled as, you know, anti-everything. And I think sometimes it is really hard for us to envision what we want instead of what we don't want, because it's easy to see something that you don't like. But I was really impressed this year by the creativity and the energy of people envisioning what they did want.
Do you feel that the protest was a good means to raise awareness about the role the school plays in Latin America?
Yeah, I think that that's the reason, one of the main reasons that I go down, is because I think that large mass movements like that are one of the only ways to get press attention, and then for the whole country to find out what's going on. And since I've been going for the past 4 years, it's been interesting to see how more and more people, just even in this college community here in St. Joseph, have found out so much more about the School of the Americas and how it's become a national issue, whereas 4 years ago, I don't think anyone knew about it.
It seems rather ridiculous, the amount of time that some spend in prison as a result of trespassing onto the grounds of the school. Just recently, half of the protesters arrested from the November 2000 vigil were released from federal prisons. Many of them received the maximum 6 months in prison, and among the arrested were a senior NASA research scientist and an 89-year-old Catholic nun. How can such lengthy prison terms be justified for simple trespassing, for doing something nonviolent that these people strongly believe in?
A lot of us feel that the prison terms are definitely unfair and way too lengthy for what these people are doing, which is to speak out against their government and to make a political symbol of their trespass.
Right.
But, I mean, I guess this judge I think it's the same judge who sees all of these cases and is known for giving maximum sentences. So people know what they're getting into when they commit the action, because they know it's likely that they'll see this judge and then get this maximum sentence. But I still think it's rather ridiculous as well. Now they have the excuse of talking about national security and saying that, you know, our action on that base kept, you know, might weaken their security or weaken their vigilance and make some big national security difference. But when it comes down to it, they've been giving these sentences, the same sentences before this event happened. I think that the main reason to go to jail is to get media coverage and for those people to be able to say their piece and be listened to in a different way than they would, you know, just writing letters to their representatives. I think they're definitely making a sacrifice for the cause, but it's a sacrifice they want and are willing to make, and I think makes a big difference in their lives. I don't see it as a negative thing at all.
What do you believe will be the result following the closure of the School of the Americas?
I think that most people who support the closing of the school understand that the same things are probably going to go on after the school closes. It just won't be as official, and it won't be a school with a name and a face and such a visible symbol of what's going on. And I think I would hope that most of us would still be working to stop those things and to stop those funds and to stop all the trainings that would probably still be going on, just less officially. But I think it will be harder to see. But at the same time, we know that there's this big symbol of what's going on. And to have that be so out in the open and so accepted is kind of disgusting, that we can point to the School of the Americas, and it's the face of all this horror that's going on, and people are still allowing that face to be seen. So I think even though we know that the school closing won't solve all the problems, we still want to close the school and then hopefully continue to work towards fixing the U.S. foreign policy, and especially down in Central and South America. And I think it's really cool to see this mobilization of people. I think the School of the Americas issue has been one recent issue that's allowed so many people to mobilize and just gotten a lot of people interested and educated about what's going on with U.S. foreign policy in general. And I think that in turn carries over to all these other issues like the IMF and the World Bank. And I think that once people are mobilized, even when the School of the Americas issue itself is at least on the surface gone, I think those same group of people, since they're already mobilized and we already have these networks of communication, can continue to work on other issues.
I thank you for joining us for part one of the School of the Americas news feature. Please stay tuned for more information on when to hear part two of this two-part series.